This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrat.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up later, we'll hear about a new documentary that explores why people call telephone hotlines for help, advice, and human connections.
First, more coverage of the grand jury decision in Ferguson, Missouri. Last night, the grand jury announced their decision not to indict Ferguson police officer Darren Wilson on 5 different counts. Wilson shot and killed the unarmed black teenager Michael Brown back in August.
We're taking your calls now. What do you think about the grand jury's decision? What was your immediate reaction when you heard? And what do you think about the relationship between the police and minority communities? How would you like to see the country move forward after this news? You can call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
President Obama addressed the nation last night after the jury's decision was announced. Here's what he had to say.
We need to recognize that this is not just an issue for Ferguson. This is an issue for America. We have made enormous progress in race relations over the course of the past several decades. I have witnessed that in my own life, and to deny that progress, I think, is to deny America's capacity for change. But what is also true is that there are still problems, and communities of color aren't just making these problems up.
Here to talk about the jury's decision and the nationwide implications is Chad Dion Lassiter. He's a professor of race relations and the president of Black Men at the Penn School of Social Work at the University of Pennsylvania. Chad, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me, and good evening.
Well, we just heard President Obama's words to the nation last night after the grand jury's decision not to indict was announced. How would you say that he did? Did he strike the right tone in a tough moment for everyone last night?
I think the president could have went a little bit farther, as he could have called for a national dialogue and conversation around policies and training, specifically anti-racism training within the police departments throughout America. I wasn't looking for the president to really take the lead on this, because he, for an extended period of time, has shown that he's either incapable of doing so or just doesn't want to do so. And so for me, I wasn't looking for anything. I wasn't sitting on the edge of my seat thinking that the president was going to bring together the effective coalition of humanity that's actually engaged in civil disobedience, not only in Ferguson, but all around the United States of America.
Now, what was your first reaction when you heard last night the news? We had to wait till about 9 o'clock to get it. No indictment. What did you think?
Out of the W.E.B. Du Bois school of thought, and that Du Bois stated that a system cannot fail those it was never built to protect. And so for me, I looked at it from a historical standpoint, that we've seen several cases like this where there doesn't seem to be justice levied appropriately when it's on the darker side of the color line. And so for me, I just continue to stay in the moment and encourage those young people that I was in contact with in Chicago, in Ferguson, in Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., just to name a few places, to make this moment a movement and to engage in civil disobedience. And so I pretty much knew that there was not going to be an indictment based on the lack of transparency that was surrounding this case for an extended period of time and the cloudy evidence.
Now, there's a particular quote that's attributed to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. that's been used quite a bit when people talk about Ferguson lately. It's riots are the language of the unheard. Do you think that's a fair assessment of what's happened in some of the civil disobedience in Ferguson? Maybe not riots, that may not be the word you use, but do you feel the black community doesn't feel heard?
I think it's been historical that the black community doesn't feel heard, and I would go a step further by saying that, in addition to King's quote, my colleague Michael B. Katz has a book entitled Why Don't American Cities Burn? And he talks about the structural inequality. He talks about the economic deprivation. He talks about the educational apartheid. And so, once again, we have to look at the fact that the violence is turned inward. There were no police officers shot or killed. Nor should we want any police officers shot and killed, just like we don't want police officers shooting unarmed black males. But we're talking about property destruction. The same things occurred when Martin Luther King was assassinated, when John F. Kennedy was assassinated, Robert Kennedy was assassinated, and finally Malcolm X were assassinated. It was property destruction. It wasn't the destruction of persons. and we don't want the destruction of persons. But we should also give that message to the police department, and that personhood and black humanity should not be seen as subhuman, but it should be seen as human.
Now, according to the statistics experts at the blog 538, grand juries do indict most of the time. So in that sense, the decision last night seems unusual. But on the other hand, use of reasonable force is reported to be a broad umbrella. What do you make of the decision not to send Darren Wilson to a criminal trial?
I think it should have been sent to a criminal trial. Once again, I think that it was an oversight and that the prosecutor failed to really present a coherent narrative to explain Wilson's actions. We can't deny that there was some sort of struggle. We can't deny that we need to do a drill down and really look at the transcripts of the testimony, the police reports, the autopsies, and the forensic evidence. But definitely, this whole entire system, for me, should have been indicted. From the judge to the prosecutor, this was gross negligence. A young man has been killed. Once again, we know that there was some sort of struggle. But once again, as we saw in the Trayvon Martin case, we're castigating the individual who's dead, and the person that's living, we're saying that they were the ones who fear for their lives. He had a gun. You know, we need to really work on excessive force and training in the communities around trust and mistrust of the police.
Now, St. Louis County Prosecuting Attorney decided to release all the reports and testimony from the trial. Do you see this as a positive move towards transparency, as maybe a gesture of good faith? How do you see it?
Well, I think it's platitudes, and I think it's placating. I think it's taken too long. I think where we're at now is, you know, justice wasn't served, and so the Brown family has called for peace. The Brown family will have to decide what the next recourse is as it relates to them and their lawyers. Once again, this was botched. There are some reports that the prosecutor is 0 for 5 as it relates to, you know, prosecuting police officers who have either shot and or killed individuals. He didn't seem like he was in the role of prosecutor as he was talking last night. He seemed like he was in a role of just placating and ingratiating, and he was devoid of emotion for me the entire time that he spoke.
I want to get a caller or two in here before we go to the news. Joe joins us first from Oconomowoc. Hi, Joe.
Good evening. Yes, I could pick up the thread there. The grand jury process is always the prosecutor's show. Defense attorneys are never there. Many times the person who's the defendant doesn't speak or is not allowed to speak even. It's their show, and they work with police all the time in law enforcement. As a result, most grand juries do not indict police officers because it would be in, just not work well with the system that they work within. That's unfortunate. We've had that in Milwaukee a couple of times. What followed was the United States Justice Department through the United States Attorney's Office would conduct a separate investigation with the FBI. There would be a finding of violation of civil rights in the same incident and an indictment for criminal violation, conviction, and ultimately punishment of the officers. I'm expecting that that type of a process will occur here, but maybe not.
Thanks a lot for your thoughts, Joe. Joe, looking toward civil rights violation charges, which are reportedly tougher to prove, what would you say about Joe's, what his thoughts were there?
I think Joe's absolutely on point, and I would just echo the same words as Lisa Bloom. And Lisa Bloom said, I'm ashamed of my justice system, so good at protecting authorities and celebrities, so pathetically unable to give justice to African Americans. Self-defense, more often than not, will always work when it's the police officer. It does not mean that it's just the police. And that's why the before mentioned, the whole entire system needs to be indicted, because it's a collaboration of the maintaining of the status quo with regards to the courts in conjunction with the police department. And so there cannot really be justice levied if we're looking at the fact that we're protecting and maintaining police even when they're engaged in police brutality and corruption.
Well, Joe, thanks a lot for the call. Another quick call from Elaine in Colfax. Hi, Elaine.
Hi. I was furious about the lack of indictment, absolutely furious. I felt like throwing a book through my own wall. I'm 55 years old. I'm white. I live in a rural area, and I'm just as infuriated as you can possibly imagine. I was mad at the president. I thought what he said was patronizing to say that there's been no we can't deny there's been improvement in decades. My God, it's like a culture of lynching young black teenagers in inner cities in this country. I'm horrified. I'm absolutely horrified.
Elaine, thank you so much for calling and sharing your feelings at this moment. And Chad, what do you think about what Elaine said? A lot of anger at the presidents there and the culture that she sees.
I think Elaine is absolutely right, and I think that's one thing that WPR should be recommended, really should be just, you guys should really just pat yourselves on the back in the sense that this is providing us a format to see that on every side of the color line, it just wasn't one-sided, that there are individuals all around the United States of America on varying sides of the color line and gender line who were also incensed, who also were enraged, who also displayed with anger and angst, and she's absolutely right. This is a president who placates, ingratiates, and displays with false generosity. This is a president who expects people to engage in a sense of nobility in the staggering face of violence and oppression.
We're talking right now with Chad Dion Lassiter, professor of race relations at the University of Pennsylvania. We'll be back to talk more with him and take more of your calls. And he's with us to talk about the grand jury's decision not to indict a white police officer who shot and killed Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri earlier this year.
Call in now with your response, your thoughts, your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We continue the conversation after the news on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're talking with Chad Dion Lassiter of the University of Pennsylvania about the grand jury's decision not to indict the police officer who shot and killed unarmed black teen Michael Brown earlier this year.
And you can weigh in at 800-642-1234. What is your reaction to that decision? What does it say about race relations in the U.S.? And how do you think the nation should move forward from here? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
To your calls in just a moment. First, a comment from Facebook from Mike. He said, keep in mind that the rage and anger are not just a response to the verdict. In this one case, generations of hatred, segregation, and racism leads to strong emotions. Chad, do we need to remember to put this decision into the big context of history and not just take a snapshot of last night?
We absolutely do. For every context, there's a pretext. And looking at the historical trajectory, we're looking at what happened in the 60s. We're looking at dogs, and we're looking at the Bloody Sunday. We're looking at the Edmund Pettus Bridge. We're looking at water hoses. We're looking at freedom riders on the other side of the color line that lost their lives trying to fight for full humanity, leaving New York and going to Mississippi. We're looking at the integration of, you know, the Woolworth counters in the schools. And we're looking at Governor Wallace standing in front of the doorways. We're looking at the Little Rock, Arkansas 9. So we're looking at those four young ladies who died a superficial martyrdom death in Sunday school. And so it's bigger than looting and violence. They are killing black males with impunity.
I want to go back to our phones now. Tony joins us in Egg Harbor. Hi, Tony.
Good evening, Veronica. Chad, thank you for the topic. I think the grand jury got it right, but let me preface that by saying I am the last person in the world that should be able to say that, because I'm not an attorney and I'm not in law enforcement. And I think the broader topic is the grand jury system is flawed because the deck is stacked against the defendant, and it's really in the favor of the state's attorney or the district attorney because he or she's the only one present pleading the case. And therefore, they're not pleading the case, but they're laying out the case. And as a result of that, civilians, 90% of the time, are going to underscore what the DA or the SA bring to the table. And I think that the grand jury system, although it's important, should really be taken over by professionals who understand the law and know if this is a case that is achievably won in court. Your opinion?
Thank you, Tony, for your thoughts. Tony says he thinks the grand jury got it right, but that the system is not working the way he thinks it should. Chad, what kind of reform would you like to see, be it judicial or legal or social?
Well, for me, I think it needs to be social. It needs to be a more transparent process for me to be on this call during this interview, trying to pretend I have a law expertise is something that I'm not going to do because it would be disingenuous to the process, and it really would just be just a gross negligence on my behalf. As a researcher and a social scientist, I can speak to the fact that we need to have civilian review boards that are monitoring some of these cases, if not the majority of these cases. We need to look at tactics like anti-racism training. We also need to dispel the myth that this is all police officers. This is not all police officers, but we also need to recognize that the pain and the anger is real. The pain and anger that you see is real, and that's why I keep going back to, you know, the president mentioning the looting and the violence, but not mentioning police brutality and white supremacy. And the fact that there is something that is happening in the psyche of some white male officers that they have to open up and just shoot black males unarmed to the degree that they do. Oscar Grant, Jordan Davis, Eric Gardner, Amadoulaye Diallo stands in his doorway with a wallet and he gets shot 41 times. What is it about that?
Now, protesters were angry last night, and people in Wisconsin and across the country, like Elaine, who we heard from earlier, angry at the decision. And there were signs from Ferguson and around the country that read, Black Lives Matter. That's a powerful statement, but how should the country and the police use those words to bring about change and positive action?
I think that police officers and police departments throughout the United States of America need to recognize the humanity of black and brown individuals, not to buy into the stereotypes and the myths that are deeply rooted in the culture of white supremacy. So when Darren Wilson argues that Mike Brown looked angry and he was coming at me looking like a demon, that's the racial polarization that a lot of the individuals have as it relates to black males being boogeymen, right? So we have to see their full humanity. We don't want to have these conflicts in the community. And so certainly there's some things on the community side that we need to be working on. And there are organizations that are working with black and Latino males around, you know, what to do when the police stop you. But the reality is you're getting killed like the 12-year-old did most recently with a toy gun. I mean, it's Elaine was absolutely right. It's 21st century lynching. And the president, he no longer can really speak to these issues because he's refused to be the bully in the pulpit.
Now, Michael Brown's family is advocating for the Michael Brown law, which would require police officers to wear cameras. That's something they'd like to see come out of this. What do you think about that proposed part of a solution?
I think it's a great solution because it's, once again, deeply rooted in the both, and it also protects the police officers. We cannot escape the fact that there have been some police officers in our country that have been killed as they were upholding and serving to protect humanity. And so by having these cameras, it will assist in the evidence. It will assist in, you know, some of the challenges that we see, not just in urban communities, but in our suburban communities as well as in our rural communities. And so I think this law is something that should be not just talked about, but we need to actually enact it. I think it's great, and it protects all stakeholders. It protects the police, it protects the individual, and it protects the community.
We're going to take another call here. Jim joins us in Rice Lake. Hi, Jim.
Hi, thanks for having me on. I do bring a legal perspective. I've been a criminal trial attorney for 30 years. And there's an old joke, an accurate but bad one in my profession, that a good prosecutor should be able to indict a ham sandwich. What you had in this case objectively is an officer that fired and discharged his weapon 12 times. He didn't suffer any permanent injury. Also, procedurally, the prosecutor could have been charged and filed a criminal complaint without going to a grand jury. It was his decision, therefore discretionary, not to charge, and to put it in the grand jury process. Then one wonders, has to wonder the question that at least the urgency or the sense of professionalism of those who sought the indictment or who filed the request for an indictment as to what sort of enthusiasm they brought to their work under the facts and circumstances of this case. I like response, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay. Thank you so much for your perspective, Jim, a legal perspective there. But, Chad, do you think there's something to take away from the grand jury moment and in different ways maybe going forward to look at cases like this?
I think that, you know, the caller was absolutely right. You know, was there any exuberance? Was there anything from the prosecutor to say that, you know, I want to make sure that this is fair and impartial? And I think that's why you're starting to get these comments that are starting to come in when a Reverend Al Sharpton says that the process, you know, itself should be indicted. You know, I think that people did not really feel as though the prosecutor was trying to prosecute Darren Wilson.
Now, when President Obama was elected, there started to be talk about living in a post-racial era. And as we've seen going forward, there have been things like Ferguson that come up and remind us that there's a lot of work to be done. What would you say about where we are right now as a country?
Well, post-racial is a mirage, and it still is a mirage. And I think that what we were so quick to do is we got excited because we had the first president of the United States of America who was a person of color. And you don't become post-racial because you say so. You have to roll up your sleeves and do the work of being tolerant, to get rid of their irrational hatred, to engage in having these frank conversations like we're doing today, to make sure that you don't engage in homophobic behavior, ethnocentrism, xenophobia, black victimization, because everything that happens in African-American communities is not a result of white supremacy, institutional racism. Where we are as a country is aspects of our country is fighting for black humanity, fighting for women reproductive rights, fighting for white humanity. I would be on your call right now if this was a black police officer shooting unarmed white males, because I see the humanity in individuals. As a country, there's another aspect of us that are really polarizing. You know, it's very quick for people to blame Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, my colleague Mark Lamont Hill, myself, and others as race baiters. That's not what we are. We're defenders of people who don't have a voice. At the present time, there's aspects of our country that's in denial about white supremacy and institutional racism, which is alive and well. Post-racial, you have to do the work to become post-racial, and we have to be committed to doing that work. And I'm not optimistic nor pessimistic, but I'm a prisoner of hope that we have enough people out here that are doing that with anti-racism training and not buying into their own victimization.
A lot of people echoing what you had to say, especially on Twitter last night. I think you've said this as well, that last night, though, people saying, teachers, throw out what you have on the curriculum for today. Talk about Ferguson for everybody. How can we use the situation as a teachable moment?
It is a teachable moment. From a mental health perspective, why was it that we were not, you know, deploying social workers, community interventionists, mental health workers, psychologists, and psychiatrists? We geared up for a paramilitary, terroristic, occupying force. We need to be looking at depression. We need to be looking at separation anxiety, abandonment, the second level of post-traumatic stress disorder for the family, for the friends of Michael Brown. And then also, I might get some flack for this, but also there has to be some form of trauma for those police officers, you know, out there on the front lines. I'm not being sympathetic or empathetic. I'm just bearing the truth. And so I think we need to be looking at all of these things in the schools. We definitely need to throw the curriculum out presently, but we also need to develop a curriculum that talks about irrational hatred, talks about, you know, seeing similarities in one another and not looking at people from a fair perspective. Art therapy, play therapy, music therapy, all these things from an age developmental perspective can aid in this moment that we can turn into a movement for all of humanity.
Chad, we leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That was Chad Dion Lassiter, professor of race relations and president of Black Men at the Penn School of Social Work at the University of Pennsylvania. He was with us to talk about the grand jury's decision not to indict Ferguson police officer Darren Wilson for shooting Michael Brown in August.